ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் சோல் மெச்சூரியேஷன் பார்ட் 2 அண்ட் ஆனந்தா, பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க் யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
I'll start with something I'm working on. Those of you who were here at our last Homa this week heard the first part, part one of this. Working on a talk that's called The Soul and Its Maturation. So it's based upon Gurudeva's teaching that the soul is life, and the essence or life of that life is God Shiva. That's Gurudeva's explanation of the soul, and it's a very wonderful explanation, as Gurudeva touched on it in his talk somewhat, but one of the phrases Gurudeva likes to use is, God Shiva is closer to you than you're breathing. It's pretty close, right? And I'm breathing, it's right there. How can something be closer than my breathing? But it makes you think, you know, because we tend to put God Shiva at a distance from us, feeling some imperfection in us. We focus on that, and therefore we put God Shiva at a distance, but actually there's no need to do that. God Shiva is inside of us, even if we aren't quite ready to see God Shiva there. He's there anyway. Gurudeva also liked to say there's one thing God Shiva can't do with all his powers, even though he's omnipotent. There's one thing he can't do, and of course, many of us remember that answer. He can't take himself out of us. He's in there, though it's permanent. And we can try and experience that at auspicious times like Mahashivaratri. And when Gurudeva says God Shiva is love, it's a very interesting concept of love, because love is normally dualistic. In Western religions, they like to say God loves you, right? No matter what you've done, God loves you. That one always catches my interest, because it's so non-Hindu. And then, because God loves you, you love God. That's good. But in Gurudeva's teachings, God Shiva is love. In fact, he's all-pervasive love. So when you experience God Shiva as all-pervasive love, there's no dualism. Shiva isn't over here and you're over here. You love Shiva and Shiva loves you. You're the same thing. At that level, you're the same thing. God Shiva is all-pervasive love and you are God Shiva. So it's a one experience. It's a love that has no dualism in it, no separation. So we'll move on. So this part of the talk is talking about the maturing of the soul, trying to give some concrete images. You know, when we talk about the soul maturing, the soul evolving, it doesn't necessarily bring a clear image to our mind. Well, what does that mean? What's involved in that process? Let's turn now to the Hindu concept of life. As we know, the Hindu perspective is that the purpose of life is to make spiritual progress, to have deeper and deeper realizations of God, which eventually result in moksha, liberation from rebirth on planet Earth. Let's ask the question, what is it that makes this spiritual progress? It is, of course, the soul. In thinking of spiritual progress, it is helpful to understand the concept of the soul not just as life and light, but as a human-like, self-effulgent form comprised of this life and light. The soul body is referred to in Sanskrit as Anandamaya Kosha, as well as Karana Sharira. Just as our physical body matures from being an infant to being an adult, so too does our soul body mature from ignorance of God to intimate communion with God. In Sanskrit, this is called Adhyatma Prasara, spiritual evolution, and of course is a process that takes place over a number of lifetimes, not just one. Gurudeva gives an insightful description of this process. The soul form evolves as its consciousness evolves, becoming more and more refined. The experiences of life and all the various planes of consciousness are food for the soul, reaping lessons that actually raise the level of intelligence and divine love. Thus, very refined souls, whether embodied or in the disembodied ajiva state, are like walking intelligences with inventive creativeness and power of preservations, beaming with love and luminosity in their self-effulgent bodies of quantum light particles. Unquote. Gurudeva goes on to state that spiritual unfoldment is not a process of awakening the higher chakras, but of closing the chakras below the Muladhara. Once this happens, the aspirant's consciousness slowly expands into the higher chakras, which are always there. The only thing that keeps the lower chakras closed is regular sadhana, japa, worship, and working within oneself. This is demonstrated by the fact that even great yogis and rishis who have awakened into the higher chakras continue to do more and more sadhana. They are constantly working to keep the forces flowing through the higher centers so that the lower ones do not claim their awareness. Brahmadwara, the doorway to the Naraka Loka just below the Muladhara chakra, has to be sealed off so that it becomes impossible for fears, hatreds, angers, and jealousies to arise. Once this begins to happen, the Muladhara chakra is stabilized and the renegade becomes a devotee of Lord Ganesha. You cannot come to Ganesha in love and respect if you are an angry or jealous person. That is our religion. The seven chakras or talas below the spine down to the feet are all seats of instinctive consciousness, the origin of fear, anger, jealousy, confusion, selfishness, absence of conscience, and malice. The first chakra below the Muladhara, called Atala and located in the hips, governs a state of mind called fear. When someone is in this consciousness, he fears God as well as other people, even himself at times. In the chakra below that, called Vitala, and located in the thighs, anger predominates. Anger comes from despair or the threat of one's self-will. Anger comes from despair or the threatening of one's self-will. When people are in the consciousness of this chakra, they are even angry at God. With their wrath, they often strike out at those around them, leaving a trail of hurt feelings behind them. From sustained anger arises a persistent, even burning sense of resentment. The third chakra below the Muladhara, called Sutala, and located in the knees, governs jealousy. Jealousy is actually a feeling of inadequacy, inferiority, and helplessness. When mixed with anger, it causes terrible reactions within the nerve system of the astral body. When people are in the consciousness of this chakra, they often deny the existence of God and they're contentiously combative with one another. Let me just briefly mention the remaining four. The fourth chakra below the Muladhara, called Tala Tala, is the consciousness of materialistic advancement over everything else. The fifth, called Rasa Tala, is the consciousness of extreme selfishness. The sixth, called Mahatala, is theft without conscience. And the seventh, called Patala, is the consciousness of malice and murder. The Muladhara Chakra, the divine seat of Lord Ganesha, is the dividing point between the lower nature and the higher nature. It is the beginning of religion for everyone, entered when consciousness arrives out of the realms below Lord Ganesha's holy feet. There are six chakras above the Muladhara chakra, which is located at the base of the spine. When awareness is flowing through these chakras, consciousness is in the higher nature. As we previously mentioned, the seven chakras below the Muladhara, and when awareness is flowing through them, consciousness is in the lower nature. In this Kali Yuga, most people live in the consciousness of the seven force centers below the Muladhara chakra. Their beliefs and attitudes strongly reflect the animal nature, the instinctive mind. We want to lift our own consciousness and that of others into the chakras above the Muladhara. This brings the mind out of the lower nature into the higher nature. We do this through personal sadhana, prayer, meditation, right thought, speech and action, and love for Lord Shiva, who is all in all. The physical body has a connection to each of the seven higher chakras through plexus, or nerves along the spinal cord, and in the cranium. As the kundalini force of awareness travels along the spine, it enters each of these chakras, energizing them and awakening in turn each function. In any one lifetime, man may predominantly be aware in two or three of the chakras, thus setting the pattern for the way he thinks and lives. He develops a comprehension of these seven regions in a natural sequence, the perfection of one leading logically to the next. Thus, though he may not be psychically seeing spinning forces within himself, man nevertheless matures through these seven chakras of memory, reason, willpower, cognition, universal love, divine sight, and spiritual illumination. It may help as we examine each of these centers individually to visualize man as a seven-storied building, with each story being one of the chakras. Awareness travels up and down in the elevator, and as it goes higher and higher, it gains a progressively broader, more comprehensive and beautiful vista. Reaching the top floor, it views the panorama below with total understanding, not only of the landscape below, but also of the relation of the building to other buildings and of each floor to the next. In conclusion, the key to making spiritual progress is to control the lower nature, to keep awareness above the lower chakras of fear, anger, jealousy, and the other base emotions. Once this has been accomplished, we are naturally drawn to be of service to others, to worship regularly and thereby deepen our devotion to God, and to look within through meditation to experience our soul nature and eventually God's indwelling presence as its very essence. This is indeed the way to make tangible spiritual progress in this lifetime. So it's a very interesting concept from Gurudeva. Whenever someone asks me about the chakras, what they don't ask is, how do I close off the lower ones? Everybody wants to spin the higher ones. Want to energize my higher chakras and get them more active. But, Gurudeva is so pragmatic and has seen so many people try and unfold, and some be successful and some not, that he gives a very solid system for making progress, which is, well, first, let's just close off the lower chakras. You know, let's conquer anger, conquer fear, conquer jealousy, conquer lust. That's the challenge. And when we've accomplished that, being in the higher chakras happens automatically. It's not a big deal. It's just a natural process. We don't have to work at it. But if we work on spinning the higher chakras, increasing their velocity and all, and we haven't closed the lower ones, it doesn't produce great results. So another thought I had in looking at this material is that in looking at these 14 chakras, there are areas within each of us. So each of us has the potential to express the qualities in any of the 14 chakras. They're not unique to some of us. It's something we all share. So consequently, when some people say, and I heard this phrase, you know, I'm an angry person. You know, it's not really an accurate statement. Everybody is potentially an angry person. Everybody has that chakra of anger sitting there, you know, just ready to be stimulated. It's just that some people express their energy through it and others don't. But it's there in everyone. You know, some people aren't angry and others not. It's just that some people are putting their energy through the chakra of anger and some people choose not to. So it's a wonderful concept of the chakras. I've never seen an explanation of the lower ones that is so complete. And Gurudev is also giving us the key to closing them off. He gives a couple of keys. One is just consistency in spiritual practices every day. You know, if we're consistent in our spiritual practices every single day, then we're less prone to become angry or fearful, jealous, and so forth. But if we're erratic, you know, we only do spiritual practices one day a week, and the other six we don't think about our spiritual practices, then there's a good chance if we've been angry in the past, we'll get angry that particular week too. So it takes daily diligence to manage to change our habit patterns. But it can be done. The other practice that Gurudeva stresses is the worship of Lord Ganesha. And that's good for any emotional problem, any kind of upset condition, to worship Lord Ganesha. Why is that? Well, Lord Ganesha relates to the Muladhara chakra, the bottom chakra of the top seven. And so if we really experience his blessings, then our awareness naturally moves into that chakra. And therefore it's above the experience of fear, which is being down one, anger being down two, or jealousy being down three chakras. So those are two simple concepts that are very useful in overcoming the tendency to express ourselves through these lower chakras. So in closing, I'll just share the thought that's in the first part of the talk, that the first part is in, encouraging us to think about our soul and to experience our soul. It gives a very simple way of experiencing the soul, which is to look into a mirror and to look into your eyes and see the life and sparkle that's in your eyes. Definitely much more life and sparkle there than anywhere else. And that's your soul. You know, very simple to do. Everyone can experience their soul just by looking in a mirror and looking in their eyes. That's life. Life is the soul. If we go deeply enough into that life, we experience a certain sense of unity. Or we experience God as the life of life. And the analogy we give is to the japa beads, rosary beads. So we have beads which have 109 beads on a cord, right? So if we're thinking of the beads, we see 109 separate beads. But if we think of the cord, there's a oneness that pervades all the beads. So that's the simple analogy. If we can look deeply enough into our life, we no longer see 70-some separate individuals here, but we see the oneness. Just like seeing the cord instead of the beads, we no longer see everyone as separate. And Yoga Swami liked to stress that because he was constantly living in that consciousness and was kind of catalyzing individuals he met to move toward it. So he would always ask the question like, you know, how many people are here? And so if someone goes around and says, 72, Swami, then he says, no, there's only one, right? Only one. So when we see only one, we're seeing God. That is God. Simplest way to experience God is to go deeply enough into the life within us so we just see the oneness that permeates everyone, which we call the life of life, or the source of life, or the essence of life, which is God Shiva. Om Namah Shivaya. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. We're preparing for our next trip. Lots of trips this year. And next one is at the end of May to Montreal, Canada, for Kumbhabhishekam. Originally was scheduled for last year, but one small detail, the Murthys didn't arrive before the scheduled Kumbhabhishekam. That's an obstacle. So we couldn't have it on time, and so they rescheduled. So it's on Memorial Day weekend, U.S. Memorial Day. So they've given us a slot for two short talks, and then there's a seminar for youth. So this comes from the seminar. We have a 45-minute presentation as part of the seminar, along with a few other people representing, and then there'll be questions and answers. So I'm trying to say a lot in 45 minutes. So I chose five beliefs and five practices to present. So this is the third belief, Ananda. The non-mystical approach to happiness is that if you attain what you desire, you are happy. And if you don't, you are unhappy. Win the lottery, get a great job, and you are happy. Miss the lottery, lose your job, and you are miserable. The dictionary tells us that happiness is the emotion evoked by success or by the prospect of possessing what one desires. Even the prospect of it makes us happy. A reflective person knows that this kind of happiness is fleeting. When we finally possess what we have been desiring, somehow the happiness soon fades and, before we know it, we are back to our dissatisfied self again, desiring something new to give us that elusive happiness. The cycle of desire, fulfillment, pleasure, loss, pain, suffering, that is the cycle of seeking happiness in outer things, be they possessions or people. What is the solution? Some say, give up desire. Desire is what is causing the whole problem. It drives us to get what we want, and when the happiness of that getting eventually wears off, we start all over again with a new desire. So if you can get rid of desire, you solve the whole problem, right? My Gurudeva looked at it differently. He said, quote, "Desire is life. And the reason we desire things is because we are alive. Desire is energy expressing itself," unquote. Thus, the only way you could get rid of desire would be to get rid of life. Even if the physical body has passed on, even if we don't have a physical body, we are still alive, still active, creative, and motivated by what? Desire. So trying to get rid of desire is not really a solution to the cycle of desire and fulfillment, because we cannot get rid of life. Instead, Gurudeva suggests we focus on uplifting our consciousness and changing what we desire. That is how we solve the problem, by channeling or transmuting our energy, desiring things that are more refined. Instead of desiring just to make ourselves happy, we desire to make our entire family and all our friends happy too. That is a higher desire. Going to school is a way of channeling energy. As a child, first we memorize, bringing the energies up out of the chakras below the Muladhara into the Muladhara chakra. Chakras, for those who are not familiar with the term, are force centers. Are centers of force and consciousness located within the inner bodies of man. In the physical body, there are corresponding nerve plexuses, ganglia, and glands. There are 7 principal chakras, and the Muladhara is located at the base of the spine. Then, in the Swadhisthana chakra, located below the navel, we reason. We learn how to think. Then we learn how to push things through and accomplish them, through the force of will in the Manipura chakra, located at the solar plexus. We are pulling the energy up into memory, reason, and willpower in the normal process of schooling. Schooling is important, for it trains us to lift our consciousness, refine our character, and harness the baser desires and emotion, such as fear, anger, jealousy, hatred, and envy. Cultural practices such as traditional Hindu religious singing, dancing, and playing a musical instrument are also effective ways of refining desire. They help raise the energies even farther than does basic study in school. In doing so, we raise our consciousness and learn to avoid the grosser states of mind, doubt, depression, and discouragement, and circumvent the base problem of desires leading ultimately to sorrow. This brings our consciousness into the Anahata chakra located near the heart. The goal is to claim the enduring or spiritual happiness that is inside of us. Happiness is already part of our inner self, but we need to learn how to experience the part of us that is always happy. This spiritual happiness is called ananda, bliss, and is the pure joy that exists in our soul. Once we have refined our desires through academic studies and cultural practices, we are religious enough to take the next step toward experiencing enduring happiness. Our religion gives us inner ways and outer ways to accomplish this. The monistic or meditative way is to turn within in meditation. Go deep into the lotus of the heart and experience our inner self, our inner life, our spiritual energy. That makes us truly happy. That's a wonderful way. There is a statement from Satguru Yogaswami that shows the deepest possibilities of the meditative approach. In Tamil it reads, "Anandam, anandam, anandam, ingum, angum, ingum, nam," and translates, "Bliss, bliss, bliss. Here, there, everywhere am I." There is also the theistic way. We go to the temple and open ourselves to the blessings of the deities. We arrive in an unhappy state and receive divine blessings. We go away uplifted and happy. Why? Because we have connected with our inner self, our soul nature, through external worship. We have connected with the same blissful state that can be achieved through meditation. My guru also gave us another way, quote, "If you want to attain happiness, make others happy," unquote. That is an insightful statement. Quite often we are unhappy because we are self-centered. We are in a selfish state of mind, concerned only about our own life, our problems, our challenges. Life is not treating us fairly, we think, so we are miserable. What's the antidote? Do something for other people. Try to make them happy. Gurudeva made an insightful statement about selfless service, quote, "Go out into the world this week and let your light shine through your kind thoughts, but let each thought manifest itself in a physical deed of doing something for someone else. Lift their burdens just a little bit, and unknowingly perhaps, you may lift something that is burdening your mind. You erase and wipe clean the mirror of your own mind through helping another. Through service and kindness, you can unwind the subconscious mind and gain a clear understanding of all laws of life. Your soul will shine forth. You will be that peace. You will radiate that inner happiness and be truly secure simply by practicing being kind in thought, word, and deed," unquote. Being surrounded by family and friends is important. It is a natural and positive state to live in. It helps us live a life. It helps us live a fulfilling dharmic life. The problem comes if we rely on family and friends to make us happy. This is a false concept. We want our happiness to come from within ourselves. Then we can share that happiness with our family and friends. Similarly, we should never fall into thinking, "I am unhappy by myself. If I get married, if I have children, or if I have lots of friends, I will somehow be happy." It does not work that way. Any temporary happiness soon wears away in the old cycle of fulfillment of desire. We get married. If we are an unhappy person, we may be happy for a while. But eventually we will fall back into the state of unhappiness, because that is our mental habit, the mode our mind operates in. That habit does not go away just because we associate with new people. The state of unhappiness only goes away permanently by our remolding our consciousness and the way we look at life, by refining our character to the point where we naturally live in a state of fulfilled contentment all of the time. And when the Hindu belief that happiness comes from giving and not from getting is second nature to us. There we are. Nice message. So it's certainly a key Hindu belief, and it's one of the answers to the question, what is the relevance of Hinduism to modern life? You know, it's an interesting question. And I already mentioned this before, but it's usually asked by an older teenager who's kind of doubting that there is any relevance of Hinduism to modern life. But you know, if the teenager was a little wiser, teenager would see that, you know, happiness is not guaranteed in life. And just because we get what we want and everything works out well doesn't make you happy. You know, otherwise, there'd be no divorce in the world, right? We'd all be happy. There'd be no unhappy rich people in the world. Everybody who's rich would be happy. But, you know, this is not the case, clearly. Happiness is elusive. And because we get married to a good person, or just because we acquire a lot of wealth, doesn't make us a happy person. So certainly everyone wants to be happy, and Hinduism provides us the tools whereby we can increase our happiness. Of course, we have to apply them to our life. Someone else can't apply them for us. But Hinduism gives us both the philosophical concept that happiness is our inner nature, as well as the tools, as mentioned here. It gives us three tools: and meditation, temple worship, and helping others, whereby we can actually increase the amount of happiness we experience in life. And in that way, obviously, Hinduism is relevant to all Hindus' lives because it makes them happier. Everyone wants to be happier. So that's kind of a very simple answer to that question. What a wonderful faith. Glad you could all come this morning.